Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A little later in the hour, Representative Dave Loebsack of Iowa's 2nd District is due to be with us. If you remember, on Monday, this program, we had U.S. Senator Grassley. So we're talking to some of our members of Congress. Dave Loebsack in our second half hour, scheduled to be with us live. If you'd like to join us with your question, you can email us right now. A question for Dave Loebsack, River to River at Iowa Public Radio. 23 years ago, Mason City TV news anchor Jody Huizentrout disappeared. Now, a group dedicated to finding her is renewing its efforts to solve that decades-old mystery. FindJudy.com put up 4 billboards around Mason City to coincide with Jody Huizentrout's 50th birthday. That would have been June 5th. This half hour, we want to discuss this disappearance in particular, and then broaden it out and talk about cases of other missing persons in Iowa, of which you may be surprised to know there are hundreds. Joining us, first of all, Beth Bednar is a member of the Find Jody team, also author of the book Dead Air. Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give us, for those who aren't acquainted especially, give us the basic circumstances of Jody Huizentrout's disappearance.
Disappeared on June 27th, 1995, early in the morning. She was on her way to her job at KIMT-TV in Mason City. She was the early morning newscaster. She failed to appear that morning at the station, and obviously the authorities were called out. She had disappeared, we presume, about 4:30 in the morning from the parking lot of her apartment building in Mason City and has not been seen since. She has been missing. A suspect has never been arrested in the case, and it is now 23 years later.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about this billboard campaign. What inspired it?
Well, Jody, Find Jody, the group, we have been around. It was formed in 2003, so it's been around for a number of years. Every year around the time of her disappearance in late June, we do a campaign to renew interest. FindJody.com has been online for many years, and we do have a lot of followers online. But this year we decided to mark what would have been Jody's 50th birthday on June 5th, and we decided to put up several billboards. There were 3 physical billboards and 1 digital billboard put up in Mason City for the month of June, just to really draw some new attention to the case. It says, "Somebody knows something. Is it you?" We did this because there have been millions of allegations made. People have come out of the woodwork with their theories. And, of course, people are always welcome to call the Mason City Police Department or the DCI, Department of Criminal Investigation. But we're offering people absolutely a new way to get information out there. We truly believe that somebody in the Mason City area or beyond knows something about what happened that morning. And we're just really looking for something to advance this case.
Mm-hmm. Has the billboard campaign yielded any response, a significant response, a valuable response?
Well, yes, we absolutely over the years have been getting tips and ideas over the years. Some of them are, you know, negligible, but others really advance some particular theories or causes. We have, yes, seen an uptick in the number of responses in the past week since the billboards have gone up.
Now, as I mentioned, you wrote a book about the case from 2011. I'm wondering, we could certainly easily spend an entire hour talking about this case and the various theories and the evidence here. We don't have that time, but I want to just narrow down on the aspects of the case, as you've done so much research on this, that you find still most troubling or puzzling to you after all the research you've done. For instance, if we just knew X, we would know what happened. Is there anything like that or anything that jumps out at you?
I don't know if I can say if we just knew X, we would have it. I can say one thing that has troubled me persistently about this case is that there is somebody I believe strongly, there is probably more than one person in Mason City, that knows exactly what went down on that day. I believe that to the core of my being. I noticed at the very beginning, and I still notice it to this day, when I talk to people in the Mason City area about the case, people say, well, I know something. They were reticent at first, very much at first, to talk to me, and I still feel that reticence in certain areas. There are many people, for sure, in Mason City that allege that the police department had something to do with it. Now, I can't speak to the veracity of that. I mean, there are all kinds of theories, but that does trouble me. People talk about it in the streets, and they know something. They are hesitant to share it, and so we really want people to know that we would love to get the information out. You can call in anonymously. You can leave a message online anonymously. Something to advance this cause would be great. Mm-hmm. It is always centered around, I believe there are three reasons why anybody, it centers around the three reasons why anybody is probably targeted for murder. And that boils down to love, money, or keeping somebody's mouth shut, those three classic reasons. And I think that is probably still the case in this instance. I do not believe that it was a stalker or somebody that just came out of the blue that morning. I believe she was targeted for a particular reason.
Mm. Beth Bednar is with us, member of the Find Jody team, author of the book Dead Air, talking about the disappearance 23 years ago of the then Mason City TV news anchor Jody Husentrout. FindJody.com put up some billboards around the Mason City area recently to coincide with what would have been Jody Husentrout's 50th birthday. Beth, stay with us. Let's move on to add Medina Romanovich to our conversation. Medina is manager of the Missing Person Clearinghouse. Hi, Medina.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. We're going to broaden out a little bit here. Tell us, first of all, quickly, what is the Missing Person Clearinghouse?
So the Iowa Missing Persons Information Clearinghouse was established in 1985, July 1st, 1985, within the Department of Public Safety. And we provide programming for compiling, coordinating, and disseminating information relating to missing persons and unidentified persons in the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, housed in the DCI. The Clearinghouse assists in helping locate missing persons through public awareness.
Right. Jody Husentrout has received a lot of attention over the years, a very high-profile missing person. But tell us, Medina, how many people at current time are listed as missing in Iowa?
We currently have 398 missing persons in the state of Iowa. Of those, are 239 are juveniles.
Mm-hmm. And do we have any status on them, any further details? Do they break down into categories missing? Do we know if they are probably still alive, probably somewhere? Any other information on those nearly 300 names?
Yeah, we have quite a few cold cases, a handful, maybe more than that. Most of our missing persons are our juvenile runaways, and those are most of the time resolved within the first 24, 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about when someone goes missing, what happens? What is the process?
So when someone goes missing, a loved one, family member, an acquaintance calls the local PD or sheriff's office and makes a report of that missing person. That missing individual is entered into a National Crime Information Center database, so that all law enforcement has access to this information across the U.S. The local agency does their investigation. The Department of Public Safety, the Clearinghouse is a assisting agency, so we only get involved when we are requested.
How does this fit in with our Amber Alert system?
So the Amber Alert system is also housed within the Department of Public Safety, and same process. The investigative agency has a missing child that they believe was abducted, and they do their investigation. The Department of Public Safety gets called, and the Amber Alert is issued by the Department of Public Safety.
And typically, Medina, how quickly are the missing persons, their whereabouts cleared up?
Every case is different. Our runaways are very quick, like I said, 24 to 48 hours usually. Others can take days, months, years. So it just depends on each case.
We talked about Jody Huizentrugh, who has to be also on that clearinghouse 23 years ago, disappearing. How many are in that category, missing for years, whereabouts unknown, real mysteries?
I don't have that exact number. Our website shows all the missing persons. We do not remove anyone. Even our cold cases, like Judy's case, is still on our public website.
Mm-hmm. There's also something I understand called an Iowa Endangered Persons Advisory. What is that?
Correct. We have an Amber Alert system, and we also have the Iowa Endangered Persons Advisory. Amber Alerts are for abducted children, and our Iowa Endangered Persons Advisory is for anything else that might be more endangered missing persons case. If they believe that the child maybe was taken by a parent, we would issue an Iowa Endangered Persons Advisory. It is the same kind of process. The notification system is all the same except for the text message notification. So Amber Alerts, you get a text message on your phone. With the Iowa Endangered Persons Advisory, you would not get the text message. Everything else is covered the same. Media, billboards activated by the DOT, mm-hmm. and email notifications and all that.
Right. Have the Amber Alert and those billboards that we see, the electronic billboards over highways and interstates, have they been effective? How effective?
Absolutely. I think any type of public awareness, public notification is effective. If we notify the public that we have a missing child, it's not just law enforcement looking. It's everybody is looking for that missing child.
Mm-hmm. When is a name removed from the database, the missing person clearinghouse?
When a person is located, and the individual, family member, whoever made the initial report, signs off on that the person has been found.
Okay. Medina Romanovich is with us, manager of the Missing Person Clearinghouse, part of the under the Iowa Department of Public Safety, talking about missing persons and specifically the case of Jody Huizentrugh, missing for 23 years now, a former Mason City TV news anchor. Let's also talk with Michael Motzinger. He's a special agent in charge of the Major Crime Unit for Zone 1 for the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Welcome back to our program, Michael.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
I understand, Agent Motzinger, you've been investigating missing persons for about 5 years now. You also work with the Child Abduction Recover Team. Are you working on cases right now? Could you tell us about them?
Not a specific case right at the moment. The Child Abduction Response Team obviously was formed about approximately 4 years ago after the Evansdale double abduction and then the Dayton double abduction that occurred about 8 months after that. And we saw that there was a need for a Child Abduction Response Team. And with that, we did bring training into the state of Iowa, and we have approximately 150 officers that have been trained throughout the state of Iowa that can come in and assist on the child abduction.
Mm-hmm. So what does this new response team offer that wasn't there before to find missing kids quickly?
Yeah, just the basic overall training, so everyone's using the same forms, so when we do go back in and try to find leads, we know where to find information. But the biggest thing is just more boots on the ground quicker. A lot of departments, when these things occur, they don't happen in a major city that has, you know, a huge department that can put a lot of people on there quickly. Time is of the essence when a child is abducted, so it's very encouraging. Law enforcement can call out to fellow law enforcement officers that have been trained in child abduction, and we can put more people on the ground and hopefully all be answering and asking the same questions and be able to respond a lot quicker.
I wonder if there are any disparities, and this might be a question also for Medina, but to you first, Agent Motzinger, are there any disparities in terms of who is reported missing, one group of people less likely to be reported missing than others?
Not that we're seeing. The biggest thing, I think the biggest misperception out there by the public is, I can't tell you how many times we've heard, well, I thought we had to wait 12 hours, or I thought we had to wait 24 hours to report someone missing. It's very important that people realize there is no time limit. If you think someone's missing, you need to get law enforcement contacted right away. They can respond. They can take the report, as Medina said earlier. And the biggest important thing is getting that person entered into the National Crime Information Center. Then that information gets put out to every law enforcement agency, so we can all start looking sooner than later. The biggest thing is, you know, don't do a time delay. I know parents start looking for their children right away, but they might look for an hour and a half, 2 hours before they finally decide to call law enforcement. We're trying to get the word and the information out there to contact law enforcement right away. You know, and then if they're found, you know, within the first hour or so, then, you know, that's a happy ending, and law enforcement goes back to doing what we're doing. But the biggest thing is don't delay in contacting authorities.
So if you would, you know, be a parent and somehow there was a communication mix-up and you thought your child, you think your child is missing, and then through some kind of communications mix-up, actually the person is, your child is somewhere where he or she is supposed to be, and it turns out that you turned him in as a missing person, is it just embarrassment, or are there other consequences for the parent who mistakenly does that?
Nope, I don't think any law enforcement agency is relieved when they, even if we're driving there to get the report taken, and the parents call back and say, hey, we tracked them down at, you know, Susie's house over here. That's just a relief to law enforcement. The biggest fear in law enforcement with a sheriff or a PD is getting that call that a child is missing, and or any person that's missing, just because it does affect the community, mm-hmm. and it does become a big deal rather quickly if they're not found. So there's not going to be a law enforcement agency out there that is going to tell the parents, don't call us. They're going to respond, and if they're on their way over there and they're found, that's just a bonus.
Right. Big sigh of relief for everyone involved. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You talked about the community. What is generally, in your experience, Agent Motzinger, the role of the community in such cases? How can that be mobilized, and to what effectiveness?
Yep. So obviously when you have something big like this happen, the great thing about the state of Iowa is people care about each other, and you'll get people from everywhere showing up, you know, what can we do to help? And that goes from not only your professional volunteers that come in, other police departments, but you'll get your huge influx of the community members coming in. They help do searching. They bring food. Businesses bring, you know, water, bug spray, you know, whatever we need. So it's a really good state, obviously, that we live in. If you've ever watched any of the footage from Evansdale, Dayton, even up in LaPorte City, the community support and showing up to help do searches is a huge thing to help law enforcement, because, you know, we only have so many members. So it's nice to get a lot of people on the ground doing the searches, and with law enforcement coordinating those searches, it just really helps expedite the process of searching for the missing person.
Mm-hmm. Medina, back to you. I'm just wondering about your relationship with your missing person clearinghouse that you have with the families of these missing persons. It must be quite emotional, quite challenging at times to deal with distressed families, members.
Absolutely. We communicate with them on a daily basis, and we want them to know that we understand and that we're always here for them, and we support them.
Mm-hmm. Agent Motzinger, can you tell us anything about the case of Jake Wilson? He is the LaPorte City teenager who went missing in April, 16-year-old. We had a massive search there. Anything you can talk about, update there?
We haven't been involved with that case here recently. We did go up, myself and another agent that works with the child abduction response team, just to see how they were doing and offer any assistance. And it was a very well-coordinated effort by the Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office and all the community members coming in and the fire department doing all the searching. I don't know what the obviously Jake's still missing. Everything at the time appeared to lead towards the water. I think they're still searching that. For an obviously updated part of that case, you'd have to contact the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office. But from what when we went up there and assisted with the search part for a day, and then we had several major crime unit agents up there assisting running leads down and trying to track things down, obviously, they're not going to give up until we find him, but it was a very well-coordinated search effort up there.
Mm-hmm. Michael Motzinger, when do you sort of cease searching? When are people, does the case become cold officially?
Yeah, officially on when do you stop searching, that's a really hard one because as law enforcement in the community, obviously you want to bring closure to the family and find the missing person, but there comes a point when you've searched everything, all the areas you think the person should be in, and you go, you know, you do the studies and, you know, 5 to 10 miles outside where they come up missing, then you're into what we call the rest of the world. So when you've done all the searching from the where they come up missing to 10, 15 miles out, at some point, just the resources and everything, you know, start becoming not available. You have to sit down with the family and just say, we're not going to quit searching, but at some point, you have to make that hard decision.
Right.
We have to stop at this point.
Right. Tough conversation.
It is a conversation that you don't like to have with family members because it's really tough.
Thank you very much, Agent Michael Motzinger of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, Medina Romanovich of the Missing Person Clearinghouse, and Beth Bednar, a member of the Find Jody team. Thank you all three for talking about missing persons and the case of Jody Huizentrout. When we come back, Congressman Dave Lobsack of Iowa's 2nd District is due to join us. Join us with your questions either by phone or via email. River to river at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a moment.